Hello, and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller, and in this segment, we're discussing how music affects the brain and can be used therapeutically. Dr. Martha Suma Chadwick joins me. She's a concert pianist. She teaches here at Shattuck, and she's the executive director of Music Therapy Gateway in Communications. On March 22nd, they've got a concert coming up called Tales of the Neural Tango. It's going to feature classical music by several composers, including Beethoven and Schumann. This is one of Schumann's pieces that's going to be featured in the concert, and coming up in the interview, we'll talk about ways that neurology and music connect. It's likely Schumann had bipolar disorder. Dr. Martha Suma Chadwick, welcome to Around and About.
Thank you very much.
So the idea behind this concert is you're going to make people aware of how music can be used in therapy, specifically neurological afflictions like dementia, autism, and Parkinson's. How does this work? I mean, I imagine music therapy, it's more than just telling somebody with Parkinson's to sit there and listen to a piece of beautiful classical music.
Oh, this is very correct. Traditional music therapy was based more on social sciences. And what we're using with these music therapy techniques is actually neurologic music therapy or biomedical music techniques. I use the two terms interchangeably. And what happens on this is the music actually affects the central nervous system. Rhythm affects how the brain can go into neuroplasticity. And so what you can do is you can use that rhythm to help drive various challenges, motor challenges, speech challenges, or cognition challenges.
And neuroplasticity, that's the idea that the brain can change, can heal itself, can improve.
This is correct. A really, an example that has happened just recently, I think, is Gabby Giffords when she was shot and could not talk, but she could sing. And so they use something called melodic intonation therapy, which basically accesses both halves of the brain. And so your speech centers are bypassed, the left side is bypassed, and you go all around the brain, and eventually you learn how to re-speak by being able to sing.
The brain makes new connections, and sometimes one part of the brain will take over for a damaged part of the brain.
Correct. Now, in the case of something like Parkinson's disease, you have a damaged part of the brain that can't be fixed. My understanding on Parkinson's disease is that there's something called the basal ganglia in our brain, and that is really damaged with Parkinson's. It's the mechanism that says get up and go. And so you'll find a lot of Parkinson's people who go into that freeze state. So you can't really help fix that, but what you can do is you can make quality of life better by providing a beat, because the beat, the music, then provides that go. And instead of just freezing, the Parkinsonian person will be able to move again.
It's sort of like dancing then?
Kind of like it, yeah.
What is a session like? What is somebody actually doing in a therapeutic session? And is it just anything like beautiful classical music, or is it a specific type of music composed specifically for these therapy sessions?
Well, the therapy is based on the fact that we all have a functional tempo. And the functional tempo, the research shows, is basically what our heart rate is going at. So typically for most kids, their functional tempo is going to be a little bit faster. It's going to be about 120 beats per minute. For most adults, it will be anywhere between 90 to 100, thereabouts. And so you find that functional tempo, and you find the beat of where that is going to be, and the person is going to respond the best to that. The research also shows that the music you want to use is the music that was popular during the time of the person's high school or college days.
Oh, because that's when a lot of people kind of their tastes form, and you don't necessarily stick with that your whole life, but that's kind of the most formative part.
Exactly. And so if you've got a person with dementia who can't really tell you what their favorite tunes are, you can take a really good guess at what was going on at the time they were in high school and college.
During this concert you've got coming up on March 22nd, you're going to be doing several classical pieces on piano. One of them is a tango. Tell tell me about the composer who created this tango that we're hearing right now.
The tango is actually, Astor Piazzolla is about the most famous tango composer in the entire world at this point. And he basically, he had his roots in South America, came, moved to New York, wanted very badly to become a classical composer. But fortunately, after he tried for several years, he met with the company of Nadia Boulanger, who said to him, well, this doesn't really sound like you. Can you play something of yours? And so he said, I was actually embarrassed. And he sat down at the piano and played through some of his tangos. And she kind of hit him on the shoulder and said, now that's Piazzolla. And he became the tango person that we, you know, the beats, the rhythm are just fabulous. And tango is something that I think goes to the heart. It really does.
And it fits into this idea of, again, using rhythm as a therapeutic tool for people.
It does. It does. And what the second half of the concert, which features the tango and some of the other rhythmic pieces, is basically all about the audience being able to tap their toes and see how their body moves just automatically to music, because that just shows how muscular motion is made so much easier with a beat going on.
You're also doing a couple of pieces by Robert Schumann. I didn't know this, he may have had bipolar disorder. How does that fit into this?
That's correct. Schumann most likely had bipolar disorder, and he had some very interesting music that was his helpers, quote-unquote, helped him compose. He had two personalities that he used. One was named Eusebius, who was his dreamy side, and the other one was named Florestan, who was his passionate and outgoing side. And he would actually sign these small pieces with either Florestan or Eusebius. And the music that he composed, he would really, the mania really worked for him for many, many years. He composed up until 1840, nothing but piano music. And then suddenly he married Clara, the love of his life, and he composed Lieder, German Lieder, just wonderful singers pieces. And he composed chamber music in 1842. And he would do all of this stuff in this huge manic element. So it really did work for him up until it didn't. And in 1852, he had a suicide attempt. Or it was at 1854. He had a suicide attempt and was never really the same again and died in an asylum after that.
And that's, I think that's one of the things that's common among really creative people is some serious personal difficulties. And the danger is, when it seems to feed the creativity, they're not necessarily motivated to do anything about it.
That's correct. And, you know, you hear about people who don't want to be on medication with bipolar because it seems to take their creativity away.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it's, you know, he rose above his problems. And that's part of the deal on the whole first part of the program is these are all composers who had some serious neural afflictions and they rose above them and became incredible composers.
Another one of the composers you're featuring had synesthesia. What is that?
Synesthesia is a condition that is kind of a mix-up of the sensory system. Evidently, it's a condition we are all born with because as you pop out and you're born, you need the world's data to kind of collect your sensory stuff together. But one in 2,000 people retains this condition. And Messiaen, Olivier Messiaen, was one of these people. And he could actually, when he saw color, he would hear sound. And the same thing would happen when he heard sound, he would see color. And there's a lot of people that have asked me about some of this music, whether, you know, gee, I hear Beethoven and I hear Schumann. Could I really tell they had a problem? And I say, well, probably not. But when you hear Messiaen, you definitely know that there's something a little bit different in the way he's looking at the world.
I can't even imagine how that would affect a musician. You would be constantly looking at things and hearing them as well as seeing them in a way no one else in the world is.
That's exactly right. And Messiaen, actually, a lot of his inspiration came from a really kind of a nasty source. He was a prisoner of war in a German camp, and so he would see these rolls of barbed wire that he couldn't get out of, but he would hear the birdsong beyond it, and he could see the northern lights beyond it, and that inspired a lot of his compositional techniques.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Dr. Martha Suma Chadwick. She's the executive director of Music Therapy Gateway in Communications. They've got a concert coming up on March 22nd. This organization of yours, it's funded from several sources. How did it get started and who all is funding it?
Well, it got started, actually, I think it was back in 2003 that we incorporated. And this was basically a result of my becoming interested in working with children with autism with music. I had been teaching here at Chaddock for many years, and I had a typical student who had an autistic younger sister. And the mother said, you know, could you teach her to play the piano? And I tried with what I knew, and frankly, it was a disaster. And so we tried with what we didn't know and found out that she was a whiz with computers. She learned how to read music via the computer. She started to play and sing, and as she started to sing, all of her verbal stuff started really popping. And at that point, I remember the hair on the back of my neck just sticking up straight when I saw this girl reading music on the piano and having, you know, looking up and singing and verbalizing and then being able to speak, and thought, you know, if I'm ever in a position to do something, this is a really great thing to do. So that's how it came about. And basically, we, you know, we're advocating for music in all forms. When we have grants, which we have this wonderful grant from Arts Build and the Tennessee Arts Commission to fund this concert series, we either do things like the concert series or we do research to try to get one of our long-term projects is to automate some of these techniques into software that we can give to families of children with autism for low or no cost. We work with certified music therapists when we can with grants to work on more research, et cetera, et cetera.
The concert is coming up on March 22nd. Where is it going to be and how can people get more information about it and your organization?
It will be here at the Chaddock Conservatory in the recital hall, which is on the main floor. It will be at 3 o'clock p.m., and you can go to www.mtgic, that's Music Therapy Gateway and Communications.org, or my own website, www.marthasuma.com, for more information. It's free. It's open to the public. We'll be mixing in some PowerPoint so you can actually see some video of some of the techniques with the kids. We'll be doing some live demonstration. You'll be hearing the music and able to step into the composer's shoes who had these problems.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Again, the free concert is called Tales of the Neural Tango. It's going to be on Sunday, March 22nd at 3 p.m. on the UTC campus in the Chaddock Conservatory building. That's the same building where WUTC's studios are located. And for WUTC, I'm Michael Edward Miller.